Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we believe that teenagers are not a problem to be solved. We are here to help you equip teenagers through the power of connection. Hey guys, we're back with our Diverse Family series and going along this month talking through different kinds of family scenarios and situations that maybe you as a helper of teenagers have not personally experienced. And that was definitely the case for me in this interview. I had the opportunity to pull Tobin in on the interview side with his mom, Donna Kroos, who they grew up in a family with a child with disabilities with Down syndrome. And this interview was fascinating and so insightful for me, who has not had this situation in my life directly. As I was telling them in the interview, I have such respect for families with children of disabilities and special needs, because what I do know is how hard it is to be a parent of a child who doesn't have those challenges. And I can't imagine how much more challenging that would be for a family who that is a part of their reality. And so Donna and Tobin did such a wonderful job of explaining kind of their family situation, what they had to deal with, kind of their philosophy and attitudes towards all of it. And as a helper, I really hope this is something that is helpful for you as someone who loves teenagers, because I know for me, I brought a lot out of this conversation. So without further ado, check out this conversation with Donna Kroos and Tobin Hodges. Okay, Donna, Tobin, welcome. Glad you guys are here. Thanks for spending a few moments with us on our podcast. And we're here to talk about being a family with a sibling with a child of special needs. And I know for me, this is not something I've experienced directly. I know whenever I look at families with special needs siblings or kids, I always think, like, how do they do it? it seems so challenging, you know. Yeah. My children are not, and I sometimes barely make it then. And so I have a lot of respect for families who have special needs kids. But if you would, Donna, just if you want to start, then Toby, you can jump in.
Sure.
Just share y'all's family experience about your daughter.
What you want to share. Well, from a very early age, my goal was to make sure that I still compartmentalized and gave all of my children as much attention as I could. So when I had the daughter with Down syndrome, I literally drug her around everywhere with me and still tried to make all of their events.
Gotcha.
Because I felt like it was important to make sure that the other children felt like they were getting as much attention from me as they needed, and that all of my attention was not just focused on the child with the disability.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that in our case, it was a little different than maybe what some people deal with, because I was the oldest, but I was 15 years older. I was 15 when Kaylee was born. And so while that does help, because my mom had some teenagers that could kind of help pick up some of the slack in the house, it also meant that we were also very involved. And so she had, like she said, she had to kind of, you know, pick up and do a lot of things on top of things. That was also one of the reasons why my mom was thrilled whenever I started driving a year later, because I was kind of the chauffeur for the other siblings as well. But I think it definitely presented different challenges than it would have if it was somebody in a more traditional, like, you know, 3 to 5 years separation, I think.
Yeah. So when you guys did find out that Kaylee had Downs, how did you prepare yourself for that? Was that something that you had resources that you leaned into? Is it more just, you know, y'all knew this was going to be a challenge? I mean, how did y'all prepare for that?
Well, I didn't know about it ahead of time, and so I was not prepared.
Gotcha.
And,
okay.
I remember the day she was born, I literally went into shock for 5 hours. I lost a few hours of that day.
Hmm.
Before I came around and started asking questions like, what's going on? So from that point, I was just hunting and reading and looking for information anywhere I could get it. So it was pretty much fly by the seat of your pants at that point.
Yeah, wow. So you didn't know, and now all of a sudden life is completely different, right? And
right.
so
So you did mention a little bit about how you parented, just kind of trying to make sure it was equitable between your kids. Right. Talk a little bit more about that. Like, how did you parent in the midst of these circumstances?
Well, the good news is that I had some very supportive parents that lived close by, and whenever possible, they would help me out. I did my very best to make it to all of their school events, to try to be there for them when they needed my support. Realistically, it didn't always work out that way, but I did the best I could to be there for everything that they needed me for, because I do think that it's natural for a sibling or a teenager to develop some resentment toward the child with a disability if they feel like their parents' focus is all 100% on them and that they're not getting the attention that they need. And that was always in the back of my mind, that I wanted to make sure they did not feel that way, if at all possible.
Gotcha. So this will probably kind of go in this bigger question about how we can support other parents who are in a similar situation, because I would think your viewpoint on this probably changed a lot.
Yes, because I was a school teacher, and before I had her, there were so many things I didn't understand when I would go into things like ARD meetings with parents with children with disabilities. I could not understand their mentality and the way they were so passionate about what they wanted for their child, and I just didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And then I had her, and then I now had been on both sides of the table.
Gotcha.
And it did make me a much better teacher, made me a much more compassionate person. So I've learned a lot of things, you know, through the experience, and it's not an easy road.
I can't imagine, yeah, because probably so many who are in those decision-making positions don't have that experience, I would imagine, of having a special needs child and the challenges that presents. And mm-hmm.
But it also, like, from a sibling standpoint, and, like, as a teenager at the time, it kind of, like, so she said that, my mom said she had the same reality of, this is a different norm, and kind of like open your eyes. I mean, the same thing happened to me, because you know you grew up in a it was a lot different time back then. But when I was growing up, like, the special needs kids were kind of the kids that were pushed to the side, and you never really ever see them unless they were coming to lunch or something like that. And thankfully, things have changed and gotten better in the school system in that regard. But it also opened my eyes to see things a little differently and kind of have some more, like, empathy and compassion for that kind of stuff. But not only for, like, the students with special needs or the people with special needs, but also, like, the families that are going through that stuff. And even at 15, I was just like, man, like, this is not what I was expecting in this situation. So it definitely adds a whole lot of perspective that you cannot have that. So, like, anybody that's listening to this that is, like, doesn't understand, like, you really can't have that unless you directly are involved with it, whether you're in a, you know, education standpoint or, like, you have someone in your family.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about how adults can better support maybe other adults who are going through that. But I'm thinking about Kaylee, and I'm thinking about how could the adults in her life maybe serve, either have served Kaylee better, or if I had a special needs teenager in my life, like, what would you want me to know if I'm trying to be a helpful person?
Okay.
Like, what would you want me to know?
For one thing, please don't stereotype them. I think our world as a whole looks at different disabilities, and if it's a child that's on the spectrum, they assume they're all the same. If it's a child that has Down syndrome, they assume they're all the same, et cetera, et cetera. And if you get to know any of them very well, you'll find out that they're just as individualized as we are. Some of them can do more than others. Some of them are higher functioning than others. Some of them react in different ways for different things, depending on their own personality. With Kaylee, she's very high functioning and completely aware of what people think and how they react to her. And so, right now, she's going through a big struggle. She just graduated from a special needs college program, and she's back home trying to figure out how she can connect with other adult friends. Huh. And that's a real struggle for her. She has days that she talks to me about how lonely she feels. So I think it's important for people to have their eyes open and look for those people. But it takes just the right kind of person to be able to be the person that befriends her. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have all of the answers for that. We're just kind of muddling our way through it at this point. But I know that a lot of times over the years, some people were very good to treat her just like anyone else, and then sometimes they were not. She's not just like everyone else, obviously, but mm-hmm. I think one of the things, the mistakes that we make as a society, is we underestimate their abilities. And some of them can do and accomplish a lot more than we want to think that they can.
Gotcha.
So.
Yeah, and I think to the, we talk about this in normal teen life groups, but just, they just need a place. They need a group. And again, going back to what I was saying earlier, the teens and the kids and the school, their school compadres, like they don't get it. Hmm. And so when they're younger, it really takes an adult to kind of recognize that and somehow foster the ability of them trying to fit in. And again, like we said, they're all different. Like some of these special needs friends, like they won't even know the difference. But some of them are very aware of that. And it doesn't matter. Like you should try to get them some social interaction no matter what. But that's the biggest thing, is a lot of times they just want to feel loved. And I mean, when that goes to adults as well, if any adults like see this, it's just that same old adage of, if you walk into the lunchroom as an adult or a student and you see somebody sitting by yourself, like your humility should show you that you need to go like somehow interact with that person. Like, I mean, like some people are better at that than others. And, mm-hmm. and that the same thing goes with special needs. Like the problem is that a lot of times with special needs people, they end up being that person a lot because they just don't have, they don't fit into the puzzle as much as others typically would.
Right, right. So let's zoom back out from Kaylee for a second to your family.
Okay.
And so, you know, for me and my family, maybe not having a special needs child, what would you want people to know about y'all's family? Just about having a family with a special needs child within your family, you know, what would you want people to know about your family?
I think in a lot of ways, we're just like any other family, but there are some differences. One thing which Tobin already touched on a little bit ago is that the other siblings have to grow up a lot faster because, like it or not, whether it's right or wrong, they're dependent upon a lot for help. And that's good. And that can be bad. And so in that situation, that's the main thing that I see that is different. And also, you know, if I'm being quite honest, having a child with special needs puts a huge financial strain on the family.
Yeah.
So sometimes maybe the other kids don't get to do some of the things they would normally do because of the financial situation. I know in our situation, she had over 37 surgeries. And so we were just kind of buried in medical bills for years.
Yeah.
So in that way, that's where it's different. Our environment a lot of times was sitting in a hospital, dealing with things that the average family doesn't even realize is going on, I guess, because they haven't had to live in that world. I don't know. What do you think, Toby?
I think, you know, you asked, what do people need to know about us? But I'll talk more generally. Like, anybody that is going through this, a lot of times they just want somebody to be there with them and walk alongside them. They don't need answers. They don't need help. It's more about they just need somebody to kind of be like, give them some normalcy. Mm. And normalcy for them means that they can go and just be a person and not have to like constantly be beat down by whatever. And that's why, like, whenever we talk about or whenever churches in the area or places in the area have respite nights, like respite nights at places are so like wildly important for parents of special needs, because that might be the one time a month they get a 2-hour window to themselves without having to worry about what's next with, and, you know, or where can we go that's not going to be a problem and that kind of thing. And again, this is a myriad of things because every special needs kid is different. So some kids can handle stuff more than others. And I think that if you are looking at a family from the outside, it's just giving them some normalcy is really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know there's times that, I think the parent wants to be able to go out with other adults and escape their reality for a little bit, for lack of a better way to put it, and just be able to have fun and enjoy themselves with the people in their age group, and for just a little bit, not have to think about what they deal with day in and day out. So that's why, yes, he's exactly correct. The respite is very important. That's one of the things that I think you can never do enough.
And I can't speak on the parenting side of it, but from like a sibling side, it also like it's those siblings need to have some time too. So like whether that's you take like if you are looking out the you take that the other siblings out for a night out or whatever, or you go and watch the kid with special needs with permission and all that stuff, and then they can have time with their parents. Like, because sometimes like when, you know, I, if anybody who's listening to this that has special needs in their family, like they lose a little bit of that relationship because the parent is having to be hyper-focused on the special needs. And like, that is, that's not a net, like, and that's the thing is I think just realizing that and acknowledging that goes a long way because then you can tackle it. Like, because otherwise that's where, like my mom was saying earlier, like, siblings can get kind of left behind or kind of get shut off to the side a little bit.
Well, I, you know, I hear the word sacrifice a lot in, in this with parents and siblings of a special needs kid, and, you know, sacrifice on lots of different levels. And I think sacrifice in ways probably families who don't have that experience would never really understand. And so, I know for me, one of the things I hear is just understanding what, you know, you guys have to go through, had to go through, probably sounds like still are in some ways, even being an adult, or being an adult and graduating, which we all hear that parenting never ends. But, you know, for a parent of special need, that probably looks different for you.
I know when you hear people say things like, I'm speaking from what I've experienced, and I'm pretty sure every parent with a special needs child has had the same thoughts, that when they talk about empty nest syndrome and how they're dreading it, and in your mind you're thinking, I'll never get to experience empty nest syndrome, more than likely. And the milestones that you expect your children to go to, and there's certain times when they hit a level where all of their other friends are getting their driver's license and things like that, and they're not. There's just all these little things that happen. It's like you grieve over and over again through the different stages of their life because you have a realization that their life is not going to be like what you expected it to be. And so there's things like that, that the only way you can understand that is to have experienced it. And, you know, like one of the things I had told Tobin about was a few years ago when Kaylee turned 16, I got something in the mail from my college alma mater, and it was a keychain for her keys for her car, but obviously didn't need it.
This is all very eye-opening for sure, you know, stuff that you assume, but having, you know, talking to you guys who have gone through the middle of it, just to gain some more insight, I guess, what are some things that you guys have learned about yourself as a mom of and as a sibling of a special needs child, and maybe, I mean, it can go positive or negative, however you want that to be, but, you know, just what have you learned about yourself through this experience?
That I was a very type A personality, and I had to let a lot of that go because you cannot function well unless you're flexible. When you have a child with disabilities, you have to learn how to be flexible, because about the time you think you've got a certain situation figured out, it will change again. And so I would say that's the number one thing. And also, like I said earlier, I've gained a lot of compassion and understanding that I didn't have before. I wish that there, I guess the one thing I learned too is that in general, the world is just not aware of the things that go on with families with special needs, again, because they haven't experienced it. I don't know that I have the answer to how to fix that.
One thing I've learned in my life is instead of grieving about the stuff that happened to me as a sibling, like it was just preparing me for stuff as an adult to deal with. So as a sibling of that, it's made me a lot more compassionate. It's made me a lot more responsible with like that kind of stuff. And it also put on my heart for not just special needs, but also for, you know, people like that come from hard places and stuff like that. And so we're talking about the doom and gloom of this stuff a lot, but like, I don't want it to be lost that like Kaylee coming into our lives also brought us a lot of beautiful things that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And, you know, every time we kind of hit one of these negative milestones or something where we're not really sure what comes next, like a pretty amazing prayer is answered, like almost every time. Mm-hmm. And just having to remind yourself that, like, while we feel like this is rough and this is hard and then we're going through some tough times, like something's always around the corner. Like that's been, like, we've had multiple times as a family where something has come around the corner that answered a pretty like heavy, serious prayer about this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I want to, you know, we're kind of wrapping up our time together, but one of the our core pieces of our audience is school staff, as you know, folks who work in schools and decision makers, counselors, principals, all. And I know, I've understood that parents with kids with disabilities and special needs, that can be sometimes a contentious relationship. Yes. There could be some challenge there. And so I guess the question for you guys, and you know, you can get as deep or as shallow as you want to on this answer, because I know it's pretty intensely personal, but how can school people help the most with families like you guys?
I would say try to get to know the child very well. As an administrator, I would hope that they would place the child in the classroom with a teacher that they know would be the most compassionate and patient with that child. And then when they get ready to go into their ARD meetings, which is a review meeting they do once a year, think ahead and plan ahead about what you're going to say and how can I say it so that it's comes across in a positive manner. Like Tobin said, always look for the positives, the things that they can do, because there are so many things that they can do, and a little bit less about what they weren't able to accomplish. Because on the other side of it, the parents sitting there just waiting to get, you know, hit with all kinds of negative things. And it's a very tough thing. Every special needs parent I've ever known, they just dread those meetings because they're afraid of what they're going to hear. So one of the things I've had to train myself to do is to look at the things that ours can do, you know, and like Tobin said, and not always just concentrate on the negative, but also be able to concentrate on the positive. I would say it's important for the administrators and the teachers to talk to the other children about how they need to treat the child in their classroom that has disabilities and the things that they can do to help them feel included, and then prepare them for some of the things that they may see that they don't know how to deal with it. I just think the open lines of communication constantly between the teacher, the parent, the administrator, talking to your students on a regular basis, praising them when they do the correct thing with those particular individuals, and then talking to them when something needs to be corrected.
Mm-hmm. I imagine so much going into those ARD meetings is so much sensitivity, so much, you know, potential. Yeah.
As a former educator myself, like going into those, because like I had to go to a lot of ARD meetings as a professional, and it's really easy. And I'm guilty of this too. So I'm not saying like I'm perfect in this, but it's really easy as the professional in that situation to be like, this kid is causing me grief as a educator, and just kind of, you want solutions, you want answers. And so that's what, you know, but the ARD stuff is, it's hard because any parent that goes in there, like they get is conversations of, here's what my kid can't do. So if there's a way to flip that narrative, and I had some great principals as a teacher that did a good job of this, and just flipping the narrative of, hey, here's some struggles, but here's some things that we're seeing that are positive, and just making it more about a relationship building, because theoretically you're going to do that for multiple years with the same staff. And so if you look at it more as a relationship builder instead of just a check the box and get the documentation down, like it'll go a lot longer way with that family than it would if you're just trying to check the box. And listen, like those meetings are rough, and you have to do a lot of them, and they're very cut and dry because we're worried about litigation and stuff. But also, like, let's worry about the human side of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So last question I'm gonna ask you guys, a helper, is someone who wants to have the biggest impact on a child like your daughter, or any child with disabilities or special needs. If you're talking to me and I want to be the best advocate I can be for a child in that situation or a family in that situation, what's one thing you would say to someone who just wants to be the best advocate that we can be?
I guess teach your children how to care and treat other children that have disabilities. Mm. That would be the number one thing. It has to start at home, teaching our children to be respectful and caring toward every individual, and realizing that every one of them were created by God, and God has a purpose for every person that he puts on the face of this earth. And even though that particular person might not look exactly like you, there is a reason why they're here, and they are one of God's children. And so teaching your kids to treat them in such a manner is very important.
Absolutely. Well, Donna, Tobin, that's a wrap on this. Thank you all so much for spending some time walking through this. This is such a heavy topic in some ways, but I know also is very important.
Yes.
Very important to be able to have good conversations around this. And so I really appreciate y'all's openness today, being willing to talk to us and share your story. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Teen Life Podcast. We hope this is a great resource for you, and you will continue to check back in each week. If this episode was meaningful for you, especially as we talk through these special situations with diverse families, I pray and I hope that you will share this with a friend. You can text this episode to a friend. You can share it via social media. We'd love for you to subscribe to the Teen Life Podcast. So this podcast comes into your feed every single week. Please make sure that you tell a friend, and if you get the chance, jump on your favorite podcast player and rate our podcast. It helps other people find this content, and we will see you next week.